Hi everyone and welcome to the Associate Cricket Podcast. Should be a relatively short episode today, but we've still got a few interesting things to cover, including Hong Kong's performance in the Asia Cup and the America's Northern T20 qualifier. And to join me to talk about those is Andrew Dixon. Hi Andrew.
Hi Russ, hi everybody.
Andrew, let's start with Hong Kong in the Asia Cup. They qualified through a pretty exciting qualifying tournament to join with the five full members from Asia. They were then put in the by far the most difficult group. India and Pakistan were in this one, and they were probably the two highest ranked sides in the tournament.
It's funny how they got drawn in the same group and how that keeps happening. I can't imagine what the odds are.
I guess it depends on who you think's pulling the levers of these odds. But it was a very Hong Kong tournament for them, only the two matches because they didn't qualify through the group stage. But a typically enigmatic performance from them. We'll start with the one against Pakistan. Bowled out for 116, which Pakistan chased pretty comfortably, and obviously a pretty disappointing performance in the opening game.
We saw that in the qualifier as well. They started really poorly against Malaysia and lost that first game in the qualifier and ended up turning it around. So yeah, Hong Kong have the tendency to slip up early on in tournaments. It's something we see from a number of teams who we see it from the US in the past as well. And fortunately though, they came back in some style against India a couple of days later.
Yeah, all the articles have been written about why they shouldn't have been there, and they almost pulled off an upset. Starting probably from roughly the 40 over mark of the Indian innings, India was flying along. They were at 240 odd and looking like they should post something well north of 300. And then the performances of Ehsan Khan and Kismet Shah held them down and kept them to 285 from their 50 overs. And then Hong Kong got the best possible start from Nishat Khan and Anshuman Rath, who put on 174. And at that point, it looked like it could have been an upset.
Yeah, I mean, it started with the wicket of Shikhar Dhawan in the India innings. He was sort of going, you know, great guns, 127 from 120 balls when he was dismissed in the 41st over. And India never seemed to really sort of recover from there, and they struggled for the rest of their innings. And then, yeah, Hong Kong got off to that great start with the 174 partnership. Once those two were out, though, sort of a lot fell on Babar Hayat, and he could only manage 18. And I think had Babar Hayat sort of managed to get in and make a bigger score, then I think this game could have gone very differently, and Hong Kong could have ended up winning the game.
It seems once again, Hong Kong, you know, they are missing players that they would hope to be having play, and I guess that's one of the reasons why they're probably a bit shallow in their middle order compared to what they'd probably hope to be. And they do seem to depend quite a bit now at the moment on Nishat Khan and Rath at the top there. Rath's performances have been pretty outstanding for a while now, but Nishat Khan's really coming into his own as well. Still a young player.
And obviously Babar Hayat coming in at three as well. You think if maybe they had, you know, Jamie Atkinson was still available to come in at four or five, that could have helped as well. But you know, Hong Kong are where they are. They lost their ODI status. They're going to struggle to get funding, certainly as much as they used to. You know, cricket isn't in the Asian Games anymore. We'll come on to that later. And that gave them a lot of funding from the government. So you know, they're missing out. But I think they've shown here that they're not regressing having lost ODI status. You know, like we saw with Canada, Bermuda, and Kenya. It's looking like they've made a statement, like the Netherlands did shortly after they lost ODI status. And perhaps Hong Kong can sort of do what the Netherlands did and just hang on and get it back pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think with those other teams, they had been regressing, or at least getting into position where they were going to regress for quite a long time prior to losing the status. I think if you look at the 2011 World Cup, the qualifiers are a real sea change in the Kenya and Canada qualified, but only just over Afghanistan and Scotland, and almost immediately following that tournament. In fact, even before the World Cup was played, it was obvious that those two teams were not necessarily in the the top four associates anymore. I don't think that's true of Hong Kong. I think they're there or thereabouts along with the tops, and there's such a quality of depth. I mean, if we're almost in a position where Hong Kong lost to Malaysia in the qualifiers and beat India in the tournament proper, which would be a big jump in terms of the rankings between those two sides.
Yeah, and we look as well. You know, Afghanistan ran sort of everybody close in this tournament, and you know, and they lost to Hong Kong during the World Cup qualifier. I think the idea that the Asia Cup is of significantly higher standard than the World Cup qualifier isn't really quite the case. You know, there are the gap is closing as we keep talking about on this podcast, and other people do as well. And you know, we saw that one-sided match in that first game Hong Kong played against Pakistan, but you know, Sri Lanka were hammered just as badly by Bangladesh, and nobody was, you know, questioning Sri Lanka's right to be in the tournament. Sri Lanka essentially finished sixth in this tournament, you know, behind Hong Kong if you look at the net run rate after that first round. So, you know, I think that, you know, that just shows, you know, that gap is not as wide as people might think. You know, yes, you get one-sided matches, but you get one-sided matches between the four members as well.
We'll look ahead to Hong Kong's stuff later, but we'll turn for the moment to the other ICC tournament that was played, which is the T20 Americas in the northern region. This was a tournament where we expected the United States and Canada to dominate and Panama and Belize to struggle in comparison, and it lived up to that billing, I guess you'd say. In fact, probably more so, Panama and Belize just really weren't in any of the matches against the United States and Canada.
I think after the first 2 days of the tournament, before Canada and the US had played, I think Canada and the US had net run rates of nearly 10, which I think just shows how dominant they were in their matches against Panama and Belize. And I mean, unfortunately, the two matches between the US and Canada were two of the probably best 2020 matches for some time. You know, obviously the first one went to a super over, and the, you know, the last one, Stephen Taylor scored 20 odd off the last over to win the game. So yeah, two exciting matches and a good turnout from the crowd there. They seem to have promoted this event really well in the local area down there in North Carolina.
Yeah, it lived up to what we were hoping when we mentioned it in the last podcast, that there's been a lot of local area interest, and I think we mentioned then that the benefits potentially of playing in a smaller municipality that will get behind having international cricket and having the national team play with you know, crowds of over 1,000 and cheering, games under lights as well. It'd be good to get a proper stream, although there was some highlights going around as well.
But they ended up streaming the second US-Canada game as well, which was apparently that took some... it was quite you know, tense negotiations behind the scenes. It was done so last minute they were unable to get commentary for it. ICC were very unwilling to stream it. I don't know why they're so unwilling to stream these tournaments. Why not? The big game they did stream was a great game as well, as I said earlier. And just stream it, even if it's just a single camera. People will watch, and it shows that you can have exciting cricket at this level.
It's worth noting too that Belize and Panama themselves had two really good games, so anyone who turned up on those days were well treated across both. Belize winning the first by 12 runs and Panama by 9. So at least they got something out of this tournament by having enough teams in it to ensure that they got opportunities to play at their level, as well as opportunities to play much better players and test themselves.
Belize and Panama will have learned a little bit from this tournament. You know, they haven't really played in ICC tournaments for quite some time. I think going back 4 or 5 years even. So it's been a while since they've been able to have this opportunity, and hopefully it won't be too long before they get another opportunity with the next World 2020 coming in the year after the one in Australia.
The other tournament that was relatively interesting was the Africa T20, which is, of course, the South African domestic cup played that included Nigeria, Uganda, and Kenya and Namibia. some really good performances out of this tournament for those sides. Uganda in Group A came away with two victories. The first two games not so good, but winning their last two to finishing probably not with a great net run rate, but certainly two wins is nothing to sniff your nose at.
No, I mean, it was the first time Uganda had played in this event as well, so to take away two wins, I think it, you know, it shows you, you know, Uganda are a rising team in Africa. They, you know, they've sort of bounced up and down between, you know, World Cricket League Divisions 2 and 3 for a number of years. They're currently in 3. Maybe they can start actually, you know, developing and playing in this tournament against your professional cricketers. It can only help that.
In Group C, Namibia and Kenya were in the same group, and both had wins. Namibia beat Kenya in the Super Over when they played each other, but Namibia got two wins of their own, and Kenya got a victory as well. So, again, a pretty good tournament for both of those. Namibia only missing out on the qualifying through of it on net run rate.
Yeah, Namibia would be very pleased with that outcome. Kenya as well, you know, they got a win. There's some incidents going into the tournament. There was a little bit of a worry that they wouldn't even be able to field a team in the event at one point, but fortunately, you know, that sort of came off. I think at one point the players were threatening strike action, or that, you know, that seems to have been happening on and off for the last 10 years. But, you know, they, obviously, you know, Kenya still managed a win. You know, a little bit unfortunate that Namibia couldn't get through that first round. Obviously, Namibia got to the final in the last event and just missed out on net run rate this time getting to the semi-final. So, you know, Namibia are a strong team and they're playing well against these teams.
And the other team there in Group D, Nigeria, they're not particularly highly ranked in the region. And so it's probably not a surprise that they struggled, but it was one of those chances that they certainly it's good that they got and took it up when they were offered the place there.
Yeah, it's probably the, you know, the highest level Nigeria have played at for some time. But you know, they all learn from their experience, and hopefully they'll come back next year. And you know, maybe this tournament can be expanded as well to include the other teams of the region, like Tanzania or Zambia or even Rwanda, who have been developing in recent years.
Yeah, and although they had some bad performances too, Nigeria, they did manage to score 136 against Northern Cape and took that into the 15th over, which shows that they certainly over the time they're there, they did manage to produce some performances of merit.
Yeah, you know, 2020 at this level tends to be about experience, and you know, you learn by playing more, and the more Nigeria play against teams of this standard, the more they'll learn.
In other tournaments that have been played, entered the East Asian Cup was one that we always like to keep our eye on, and involving Japan, the Hong Kong Dragons, China, and South Korea. Japan came away from this with the victory, particularly good performance from them.
Yeah, they'll be, you know, very very pleased with that with that win in this tournament. They won all three of their games in the first round in the group stage, and then beat Hong Kong Dragons quite convincingly in the final. Little bit of a sort of interesting sort of tidbit to Japan's squad in this tournament. They've had a former professional baseball player who played in the highest level of Japanese baseball before. I think there's a sort of a scheme in place from Nippon Professional Baseball to have, you know, baseball players who have lost their professional contract to play cricket, and it's an interesting scheme. One, you know, certainly worth keeping an eye on. The player himself didn't do too well in this tournament, but it's certainly an interesting development.
Yeah, and it's a good tournament to practice those kind of skills, given the level and the opportunities within that region. All of these teams, including the Hong Kong Dragons, are emerging in the sense.
Yeah, you know, and you know, China, you know, always have a lot of hopes, and you know, Japan, as we were just saying, and South Korea have been developing in recent years as well. You know, they've moved away from a sort of expatriate heavy team into a majority Korean team, and you know, they got that win against against China in the first round, quite a convincing win by 9 wickets. And you know these teams are all developing, and you know, tournaments like this can only help. And you know, next time, of course, this will be, you know, other than the games involving Hong Kong Dragons, will be a full T20 international team tournament.
Yeah, and particularly for Japan and South Korea, with the East Asia Pacific tournament coming up in December, though, this is certainly a good prep for that. And it'll be a tournament that both of those teams will be thinking they could get out of, given the other teams, the Philippines and Indonesia.
That should be a very interesting tournament to follow. You'd certainly make Japan favourites from it. I think only one actually qualifies for the final, which is unfortunate for one of those two teams. But it should be an interesting tournament to keep an eye on.
Speaking of preparations and also a tournament, a trophy that's existed for a long time, it's the Stan Nagaya Trophy between Singapore and Malaysia. It was played as T20s this year in prep for the tournament that's coming up, and Singapore came away with 3 victories, by 2-4 and then 6 wickets.
I think a little bit of a surprise. I think Malaysia tend to be the strongest team between the two, but you know, obviously Singapore playing at home. Won all 3 games this time, so they'll be in good confidence going into the sub-regional qualifier coming up.
Before we get to those previews, though, Andrew, there's a little bit of ICC news and bits and pieces. I guess Japan's actually one we can start with, which is that the ICC has apparently approached the organisers of the Asia Games and to try and get it back in Japan in 2026, which is good news. They've got a facility there in Sanno to play, so it's not as big an issue as it was in Incheon. Hopefully it'll pay off and again pave the way for a potential Olympic bid in 2028.
Certainly. Obviously, you know, there's a facility in Los Angeles as well, which hosted World Cricket League Division 4 the other year. So you know, anything that the ICC can do to get cricket into these multi-sports events, I think at the moment it's only in the Pacific Games and the Southeast Asian Games as well. It is a good thing, you know, especially in your sort of new territories like in Japan for the Asian Games. You know, Sano's made a big deal about being the cricket city in Japan, and you know, if they can get the Asian Games hosted there with some top teams coming over, even if they only send their A teams, it'll be a good boost for them, and certainly an opportunity to promote cricket throughout the region.
Obviously, for the Olympics, the barriers are pretty well established. The ECB was opposed to it and may still be opposed to it because of the way it falls within their summer, and the BCCI still seems to be the biggest roadblock, and mostly about the WADA rules.
There was a little bit of news came out this week. The WADA were thinking of actually declaring the ICC a non-compliant body because of the BCCI's objections to that whereabouts clause in the WADA rules. So, if WADA did declare the ICC non-compliant, then you can sort of kiss goodbye to cricket being in the Olympics and possibly even the Asian Games.
In the other ICC news, there's been a bit of chat about status. It was noted during the Asia Cup that the games that Hong Kong played, despite not being an official one-day international team, would actually count as one-day internationals, which, as we've said probably a million times on this podcast, is just common sense that it's done at a tournament level and not by status. It seems that the ICC may be coming around to that view.
They said certainly the next World Cup qualifier will be an ODI tournament. You think that perhaps that will expand to the World Cricket League Championship, whatever form that takes. That was apparently discussed at a meeting in Madrid recently, but nothing's sort of come out from that meeting, as these meetings tend not to produce anything that was anything publicly. Around the time that 2020 international status for everybody was being proposed, there was a proposal on the table to give ODI status to the whole World Cricket League right down to Division 5. Maybe that's still on the table. That would be quite a big change. But certainly you would expect maybe the World Cricket League Championship and perhaps even World Cricket League Division 2 as well to be of ODI standard. Certainly the last one was a very exciting tournament, and it had a team with ODI status in it, so we could well see that happen. But yeah, it's good to think that the ICC are reviewing this. I'd like them to see, well, maybe actually, if we give everybody T20 I status, why not give everybody ODI status and just be done with this, status nonsense? But maybe they won't do that.
It may be baby steps. It may also, and I think it does come down a lot to the nature of what people see when they see results. And World Cricket League 2 and even World Cricket League's Division 3 is when you start seeing tournaments which include teams with current one-day international status and others that don't, but they're playing at the same level and losing to the teams that don't, or teams that used to have it, who you just assume would still have it. Canada's a good example of this. Who are playing against teams that used to have it, but that don't still have it. It becomes quite a strange situation for the ICC to try and justify the rule that they've got. So I think that's, as much as anything, it's because it's starting to look a little bit silly.
Yeah, the more we see teams of different status playing together, the more it's apparent that those boundaries between the status categories are completely artificial and bear no resemblance to how good the teams actually are. Your teams are losing ODI status on the basis of one match, and in some cases, you look at in some of those cases in the World Cup qualifier, had one result that didn't even involve Hong Kong had gone another way, then Hong Kong would still have ODI status now. I saw one suggestion from somewhere else which seems sensible, that a team shouldn't lose ODI status unless they drop below World Cricket League Division 3 level, which again is another sort of sensible sort of solution to it, where you get that opportunity to retain your ODI status so you don't sort of regress too quickly. There's all sorts of things that you can do. And it's good that they're actually starting to look at it and starting to realise that their current sort of system of giving and taking away status is a little bit nonsensical.
And of course, and it should also be added that that it has almost no financial bearing. In fact, I don't think it has any financial bearing, whereas in the past it actually made a big difference to whether or not a team was receiving blocks of funding. Now it's entirely based on how many tournaments you play and your position within the scorecard. And in that case, there are teams high on the scorecard that don't have status and teams lower on the scorecard who don't. And the teams playing in tournaments that get funding and teams that don't get to play tournaments who get no funding because they didn't play. So the funding has almost no bearing to status now. And I think that makes it easier as well for the ICC to say, well, it's not a thing that matters in general sense, except from a statistical perspective.
Yeah.
Finally, let's turn to some previews, Andrew. The big tournament that's coming up is the Asian East Zone qualifier for the World T20. There are 7 teams involved, Malaysia, Bhutan, Nepal, Burma, Thailand, China and Singapore. There's probably a pretty clear tiers between the 3 teams we're going to expect to qualify, which I assume, and you'll agree with me on this, is Nepal, Singapore, Malaysia, and the other 4 teams in this tournament, and it would probably be a surprise if it didn't fall in one particular way.
It's just as we saw with that America's qualifier we spoke about earlier, there's a clear sort of dividing line between the teams in this tournament. You expect Malaysia, Singapore and Nepal to qualify. Burma are not very good. We saw that in the Southeast Asian Games last year. China lived up to the hope that was expressed, and their plan was that they'd be playing in the World Cup next year, and look how far they've gone. Bhutan are way off the pace. Thailand, their women's side are very good, the men's side less so. So I don't really see them challenging. I think it's, if any of them are to actually get into that top 3, they're relying on probably, let's be honest, Nepal having a nightmare in a game or two, which is always a possibility for them.
Yeah, I mean, if they upset the right team and that team loses to all the other teams, anything can happen. And I think every team would think that on the right day something might happen, even though we know that it's reasonably rare. It should be pointed out that the ICC has been reasonably careful with the way they've constructed these groups to ensure that the teams that you'd expect to qualify have the best opportunity to do so, and have and the number of places tends to reflect that. So that's why we're seeing, I think, in these tournaments, these quite clear defining lines between and good and not so good.
I think we'll see that in the next African tournament as well, where you would look at Namibia and Zambia to qualify for two places from that tournament. You'll see it. I think the only one, as we were saying earlier, has been that next East Asia Pacific one, where it's probably between Japan and South Korea for one place. It's probably the only one where it sort of could go either way. That's sort of where they are. I think it's not quite rigging the draw, but it's creating a when you have these sub regionals, you want them to be. You don't want it to be structured such that teams that are really good in one group miss out in favour of weaker teams from other groups. Which, if you based it purely on a true regional basis, you may get.
Yeah, and look, a large part of this is giving those opportunities to those teams to play against each other and then to test themselves against those better sides. So the fact that they may have a couple of... ultimately, it's three games. And in some of these other tournaments, it's two games that aren't particularly close. Isn't a big deal in the grand scheme of things.
No, one-sided matches happen. It's part of cricket. They don't happen particularly more often when associates are involved. What people may think, there's a little bit of confirmation bias there when people say that. So we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be an interesting tournament coming up in Malaysia there. So Malaysia, Singapore and Nepal, I think, are the obvious picks for qualification.
And finally, Hong Kong is undertaking a tour of PNG, which will probably be their last cricket for a fair while. And certainly, for some of their players, the last cricket of any top while for a little bit.
Obviously, they'll have the World T20 qualifier to play in at some point in 2019, but aside from that, it's good that this tour is going ahead. Obviously, Papua New Guinea and Hong Kong have had a sort of good relationship, those two boards, in recent years. They played the first ODIs against, Papua New Guinea played their first ODIs against Hong Kong, and they've often sort of played against each other outside of ICC tournaments. It's good that there's funding available for this. For this event, they play a 2020 triangular involving the Papua New Guinea Academy as well. A couple of one day matches. So it's good, as I say, that these tournaments are. I think there's some talk of maybe a reciprocal tour early next year, but Hong Kong, I think, are having a little bit of trouble recently, as we were saying earlier, lost a bit of funding through cricket leaving the Asian Games for now, and they've had to postpone the Hong Kong Sixes by 12 months, and then the Hong Kong T20 Blitz was scheduled for, I think, February, March next year. That's been postponed until November next year as well. So they're having a little bit of trouble sort of organising things in Hong Kong at the moment, but obviously it's good that they're still giving the national team some match practice.
And that's it for this episode. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Russ, as always.